Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it's my turn. I picked a story that was actually suggested to us by a listener. It's called The Complete by Gabriel Smith. I give up on a novel about a girl who involuntarily throws up everything she eats. In the sick, every time is a beautiful vomit-slicked pearl, as if she's part oyster. I give up on a novel about a girl who visits an old writer by the sea. He was in love with her dead mother, but it was unrequited. When the old man dies, he leaves the girl his slowly eroding house. It is full of half-finished stories. I give up on a novel about the death of a charismatic publisher. A cohort of his students who have not seen each other in years attend his funeral, stay in his home after. Together, they remember their teacher. Remember how to write. The reader pieces together the student's stories into some greater, more meaningful narrative. I give up on a novel about the town I grew up in, the lives of the people there, but with an algorithm as a narrator rather than a human. All of these have the same title, The Complete. So the cover says, The Complete Gabriel Smith, a little joke. But in hindsight, a funnier title would have been The Incomplete. The Pope rolls down the limousine window when the cop knocks on it. The cop sees the Pope sitting there in his Pope dress and big Pope hat, his Pope hands at 10 and 2. The cop looks at the Pope. He almost says something, then he doesn't. He just makes a hand gesture for the Pope to stay put. Then he walks back to his cop car and sits back down and gets on the radio to a superior officer. Chsh, the cop says, I've just pulled over someone going 110 on the highway. Over. Chsh, the superior officer says, so arrest them. Over. Chsh, I think it's someone famous. I'm not sure what to do. Over. Chsh, that's great. It'll be great publicity. Is it an athlete? A pop star? Over. Chsh, more famous than that. Over. Chsh, a politician? Who? Over. Chsh, no, says the cop. Even more famous. Over. Chsh, more famous, the superior says. Just tell me. Over. Chsh, well, says the cop. I think I've just pulled God over. Over. Chsh, you've pulled over God? What? Over? Chsh, yes, I think I've pulled God over. Over. Chsh, have you gone mad? Why do you think you've pulled over God? The superior officer says. Over. Chsh, well, the cop says, his limousine is driven by the Pope. That's the punchline. I thought that was a funny joke. Yeah, so the story's told in all these different sections like that. I think you could kind of break them up and maybe read all the sections about the Pope joke all together because he reveals it in different sections throughout. And then there's a couple sections like the one I read before that where he's talking about different works that he's thought about and put down. And then there's other sections in here where he's talking about his best friend or talking about another writer friend. And it all kind of seems to be taking place in 2020 in the real world, sort of.
Yeah, with the kind of vague motions towards this was a flashback, this is the future, this is a potential future, this is like an invented story future, this is a novel I was working on future.
Right. It's hard to know.
Yeah.
It's all over the place that way. I think by the end, I kind of get the feeling that the sections that were maybe closest to what he was trying to say were the sections like the first one I read, where he's talking about writing and he's talking about how he hasn't finished any of this stuff and how he kind of keeps coming up with these bizarre plots, but it's all to say the same thing, which he has yet like failed to fully capture. But he knows what he wants to say as a writer, it sounds like.
It also refers to the title of those stories to be what the title of the short story is with his own real name. So you're like, okay, this narrator actually him.
Yeah, so that kind of like meta fiction where you're talking about writing. And maybe it's only really exciting for people that also write. You know, I always wonder about that. It's like if you were playing a video game about a video game creator. Like, that'd be really cool for other video game creators, but I don't know how fun it would be for the average player. Yeah, I don't know that I totally understand what Gabriel Smith is getting at by the end. I think I have a decent idea, but I think what was definite for this piece was the effect of all these little sections creating this like overall mood or tone for him. I got the sense that this is what it was like for him maybe in 2020 or whatever this is, whenever this is taking place. And he has references to like another character talking about how time feels different. It feels staccato, or it feels like it's not in place, like fixed in place.
She says, it used to feel staccato, like moments. Now it feels like a wash. That's just a random Australian girl who said that to him.
Yeah, the effect kind of feels like one or the other version of that. Like in some way, this feels more staccato because when I'm talking about a section, it's just like this drop case letter that's like set aside.
Yeah, I was calling this these snippets.
Okay.
Like we think of breaking things up into like vignettes. There's gonna be a story, there can be a vignette. And I was thinking these are like snippets because they're like just snipped apart. Some of them literally, like the Pope joke thing, is a snippet
Yeah.
here, a snippet there, a snippet there before it concludes, with other things interlarded, if you will. Each moment or each thing, whatever we're gonna
Like
wanna call them.
thread or something. Oh,
Yeah,
snippet, sure.
Yeah, each thing is like a snippet standing on its own on the page, but is connected in various ways. Like, I feel like he's making threads because he's establishing characters. There's a narrator, obviously. There's other characters that reoccur. There's Harry, Millie. The ash tree reoccurs in different moments, right? So there's those little things that like kind of bridge connections amongst these snippets, which start creating, like I said, threads. And then the threads kind of weave together. They touch here and there. Like, some of them are literally like continuation. Like the Pope joke,
yeah,
or the weird narrative, the person who crashes into the tree and loses their best friend and lives his whole life and then wakes up from the coma realizing that their friend didn't die but they've lost the family they thought they had.
Right.
Those are reoccurring threads within the snippets. Anyway, it's all bundled together to create this overall thing, whatever the overall thing is. It's an interesting thing to kind of rip apart, to try to figure out how it's structured as far as like those, how those connections are made, you know, with reoccurring names and reoccurring objects.
Right.
Even the woman with the blue eyes, like you just recognize her because she has the blue eyes at the end, even though she's like very little else is said about her, but it makes that connection to the earlier part.
Yeah. So like you said, they are a little more interwoven than they are just interspersed. Like we have sections of this one thread, but it references the other thread. And that's not easy to do. We were talking,
no.
We talked recently in my workshop about stories told as letters or diary entries, you know, and
yeah.
Unless you're Anne Frank and it's your literal diary, like doing it this way is a very difficult method of storytelling. Unless it's an actual diary, I'm not really interested in reading like examples of a diary, but you know, things like the diary entries or letters between characters, we think it's like a clever, cool way to do things, but we kind of forget that it has to tell a story, move forward, but still feel like authentic letters, which don't tell stories and don't move forward. And I think then the danger is something like Maid and Butler, where you have to explain things in these letters. Anyway, I like stories that are told this way. I've talked about this as being something that I've tried to do in some of my short stories. And when I first started doing it, feeling like this was some kind of a hack, where you could write, like, maybe you have four characters in your story and you write about these two, A and B, and then you write about C and D, and then you like intersperse these sections. You just cut it at a natural stopping point with a scene, and then you switch to these other characters. And maybe as your reader is reading, they don't totally get why we're switching, except that the scene has ended. But by the end, there's something intentional about how this has unfolded in the time that it has. And that's one way to do things that I think you can do kind of after the fact. You can write your story and then you can edit it that way, or you piece it together.
You talked about this a little bit with that blue alien story, the When They Came to Us. I always liked that because, you know, like you can do that with like snippety things like this. Like you just write out the Pope joke and then you just put it in different places. But you can also do that with whole novels. Like there's novels that are each chapter is a different point of view character, and you could write them all just straight through and then just find the places to break them up and how they kind of fit together later.
And I think especially when it comes to a novel, it's easier to see why that becomes more difficult, right? The longer something is, like, how do we hold a reader's attention? But I think a good example is what Gabriel Smith is doing here. And like you said, these snippets are not just interspersed, but they're related. And so the ash tree appears in several of these. And if you read it all the way through, you can tell that the ash tree is having its own thread. You know, like the first time it's mentioned, it should be the first time that it's mentioned. The second time is intentionally the second time. So who knows how he wrote this, right? He might have done the hack that we're talking about where you do just write it and then weave it. But maybe for him, it was he wrote this start to finish. Like, who knows, you know?
Yeah.
But there's something about reminding yourself that they can be interwoven too. Like, they can be related. And that's, I think, what adds like that depth to it. Because for the record, I really don't like novels that are told from different characters. And I know that's like a really popular thing these days where it's like one chapter's one character and the next chapter's another character and the third chapter's a third character and then it goes back, you know, and we're in the rotation. I really don't enjoy it for like so many reasons. But I think what works here is that it's the same narrator. That's what I don't mind.
That is a good question. There's something, I want to come back to that, but I understand what you mean.
I think why it works is because this is mimicking a type of conundrum he's facing as a writer. You know, I want to tell you this thing about the Pope joke. It seems important to my message, but I don't know when or how to tell you. And it's not as if it's stream of consciousness. It's just that he's struggling to put all these things together to say what he knows he wants to say. He just doesn't know how to say it yet. So it appears disjointed, but in a lot of ways, it's the best way he can tell it. It's the most intentional way he can do it. And so I don't mind that he's sort of jumping from point A to point B back to point A. It seems like this is the structure he's arrived on.
Yeah. I mean, and the disjointedness is kind of characters within this say that life life became this way during this time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a reflection of the way he was experiencing these things too.
Right. Possibly. And the second time I read the story, I knew that that was the structure. And so I was better able to like read this and kind of sit back and realize that this is all going to come together. The first time I read it, it was that feeling of, you know, that disjointed feeling was like most prominent because I didn't know when and if he was going to revisit some of these threads. I didn't know if that was the end of the Pope joke. And I didn't know why that mattered until I read the section again, like 3 or 4 pages later. You know, I think this is a story that's good to read a second time for that reason, because the first time you might be like struggling to like get your feet under you, and the second time you can better appreciate how it's all linked. But I do think what I like about it is that it is the same narrator, and that it is first person, that it is sort of meta. I think those three things really make this structure the right choice, but make it work. I don't think in everything it's going to be the right choice, but you wanted to say something about,
well, the narrator thing, like what you just said is I struggle with whether it is the same narrator throughout, because if it is, it's different aspects of the narrator. Like there's the fictive narrator that is like a character within one of the novels or something. And there's also the character that is the author narrator, if you will, like the person who is writing this thing, not the other things, right? So there's the I who creates the other I to be a character within a story. And then there's the author who's creating that first I. And they are represented in three different modes, if you will, where sometimes you feel like, okay, this is the character in a novel that the writer character is writing. And sometimes you feel like this is the writer character. And sometimes you feel like this is the author, right? But they're all I. And in a certain respect, they're all the same person. Mm-hmm. But in another way, they can be separated. So that's I guess that's the main point I was thinking of.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that too, because it wasn't totally clear that it was the same writer or narrator the first time I read it. You know, it was like, like you said, it seemed to be like at different points in like his imagined future past. Is this 2020? Are we reflecting on 2020?
I do have trouble with, like, if I read a story, I don't feel like I should have to know anything about the author.
Yeah.
Like if there's a name on it, I don't even care what the name is. Beside the fact that like, I like George Saunders as a writer. And if I see his name on a story, I'm excited to read it because I'm pretty sure I'm going to like it. But like most of the stories we do for this, I've never heard of these people until we read the story that we've read. And so to me, they don't exist. They're nobody. The story just is like sui generis and come out of nowhere. So the story should be able to contain itself, and I shouldn't need to know anything about an author in order to enjoy a story.
But
like this feels very much like the author is part of the story. Like he's writing himself. And I don't always like knowing, or I don't always like having to struggle with, well, do I need to know more about the author in order to understand this story? Like I should just be able to get what I need to get from the page. And with this story, I do. I think everything I need to know is here. I can posit that this isn't entirely fictional. Like this is like some housewife in Iowa writing this, like not some guy in London, right? Sure. She's just invented this Gabriel Smith fella.
Right.
But the fact that Gabriel Smith is mentioned as a character is like the name that he would put on the novel. And it's also the byline when I go to the website.
Yeah. Then you're like, I wonder if I'm missing something.
Yeah. The other thing I realized when I was reading this is like when writer characters write or talk about writing, especially when there's that confusion of whether or not it's the author or the character, I'm not sure if it's autobiographical, right? So I'm like, is a writer talking about writing or about their projects, is it equivalent to a character talking about a dream, right? Where it's like
unreliable, made up.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know what to do with it. Like in real life, if someone tells you about your dream, you're like, you close your ears and you're like, okay, it's only important for you. Like, I don't need to hear about your dream. You're excited about your dream. You barely remember it. You can't express what you feel about it.
This is how I feel.
Yeah. So it's not quite the same, but it's a little bit like that when a writer is talking about what they're writing, their unfinished story or their idea. It's
this
like
is
a
most
dream.
Exciting for you.
Yeah. I don't necessarily know how to connect with it.
And you can't fully explain it. Yeah. Like explaining it is so far removed from experiencing it that it's almost not worth articulating.
Yes.
It's like when you say you had to be there, it's like, then why did you tell me?
It's because halfway through you realize I was not connecting with what you were saying.
Yeah, halfway through you realize you're boring this other person. Well, I get what you're saying. I wonder if you would feel differently though if this was a story by like Stephen King and he mentions himself.
I've never heard of Gabriel Smith, right? So that's part of it too.
You know, I feel like most of what I know about Stephen King I've like learned passively. I haven't like decided I want to learn about Stephen King, but when you you read On Writing, you have to learn a little bit about him, yeah, or a lot of bit about him.
And that's like biographical, autobiographical. That's like literally, I'm telling you about me.
No, I just mean I haven't intentionally sought this information necessarily. I've read his stuff, but it's not often that I like sit there and decide that I'm going to read an actual biography or an actual autobiography about a writer. I don't really care. I'm kind of like you, where I want to be able to enjoy something at face value as I'm reading it. I don't want to have to do work to understand it, because how much of the experience then is what I'm doing before I have to do it? You know, if I can't enjoy just what's there, it feels like something else. But it does end up feeling like kind of like self-important then, to be somewhat of a nobody and to be talking about how hard it is for you to like do your work, and you're like, what work? I mean, I looked this guy up, and like he's got like a forthcoming book, or maybe it's already out. And it's not that I doubt that he's, you know, doing things that are being published and recognized, and that he has a fan base of some sort, right? Like people who have read more than one of his things. But I think you're right. I think on some level, if I don't know who you are and I'm reading this kind of thing, it's just kind of like, are you in an MFA program? Are you single, exploring your sexuality? Like, we get it. We get it. You know, it's like the dream thing, where like your personal struggle toward whatever it is you're trying to say is at once common and unique to you.
Yeah.
So maybe he doesn't always write about writing. Maybe we can give him a pass that way, right? This is something he wanted to get off his chest, because otherwise he is writing things that are whatever. But it does add something where you're just kind of like, we get it, Gabriel. This is hard. It's so hard being a writer.
And I read this and I enjoyed it and I thought it was good. Mm-hmm. I don't want to disparage it in any way.
No,
I
same. Just, exactly.
These are just questions that come up when I, like, just because I'm considering the story for this podcast. The other part of it is like, I started it and I was like, oh, I don't want to read pandemic fiction. Like the first paragraph, I was like, ah, great, a pandemic story.
Yeah, you know, I shared something in our newsletter recently, and I think, I forget who, but an outlet did a roundup of pandemic fiction that had been published or whatever it was. And my immediate thought was, I'm not interested in any of this. I don't want to click and read any of this. Because there are two types of people during the pandemic. People that were going to write during the pandemic as a way to take advantage of time and space, whatever. And then there are people that decided to write about the pandemic. And then there are some people that did both. And the people that wrote about the pandemic or did both, it was just like, there can only be one of us. There can only be one defining, you know, book about this time. And I think most of us would argue that like living it was enough and we don't really care to read it.
Well, that's one of the problems with fiction, is like fiction itself is always contingent and idiosyncratic. If it's about a character, a well-realized character, it can only be about that character. And yet when we read fiction, we often make the assumption that it's speaking to some universal human truth, right?
Yeah.
Because it often is. It's like saying, this is what people are like. Look at this person do these things.
Yeah.
And for the pandemic, everyone went through that pandemic. Everyone has the experience of it. So if I read somebody else's experience of it, I'm like, that's not what it was.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can't connect with it. You think your experience of the pandemic was so important that you're going to put it in a story? It wasn't that important, because everyone did it.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like you kind of miss the boat if it's going to be like some kind of a first person experience, where you would have had to have had a really unique one, and then a magazine would have published it like a month after it happened in 2020. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I got stuck in France during the pandemic. Oops. Or like whatever it was. Otherwise, it was like, we all get it. We all get it.
It could be about that too. Like, it could be about being stuck in France, which isn't necessarily about the pandemic, right?
No, yeah.
It has to be something different.
That's what I mean, yeah.
And, you know, this has that. Again, and I'm not meaning to disparage this story. I just, when I read the first paragraph, that was my thought. I immediately fell into something different, because this is not what I'm talking about. This is a different kind of story.
But I felt a similar, like, kind of, like, chagrin, where you're like, is this going to be about that?
Yeah.
I liked it by the end. I think, like I said early on, that I think I understood by the end what it was he was, like, sort of trying to communicate overall. But mostly, I just really enjoyed the structure. And I think the structure itself, like, lends to this tone. And I think no matter what you're writing about, you can probably use a structure like this, and it'll be slightly different. It's not that the structure itself, like, creates the same tone every time, but there's something about, like, telling the story separately and, like, forcing the reader to jump from here to there every once in a while. And I would argue, like I said, keeping the same narrator throughout. Even something about first person to me feels really strong for this type of thing, because it's a type of stream of consciousness, but it's a little more intentional.
The first person aspect of this is really interesting because, like, I already talked about having the three different eyes.
Yeah.
And the third of those, which is like the character within the story that the other character is writing, there could be different versions of that eye as well.
Yeah.
But it's like a measure of depth, like which version of I is like how far into the fiction we're going. But the first paragraph is we. It's like talking like a cultural moment, which is like what we both reacted to. It's like, oh, it's pandemic stuff. And the second snippet is third person. It's a joke. It's a Jew dies, he ascends to heaven. And this is all third person. It's, there's no I in any of that. It's not till the third snippet we get to an I.
I know. I was, yes, yes.
And that has all the cues of like scene setting too. It's like, so here we are on Earth, specifically London right now. This is like how you get out of a flashback. It's like now they were in the museum or whatever, using the word now, right? And then I'm doing this. That's the first place where you feel like you're in the scene. So like it is a first person, but it takes so long to get there. It's interesting the way it's constructed.
Yeah, I remember reading it the first time too, like you said. That's why I think it benefits you to read it twice at least, this kind of story, because I didn't know that it was going to be first person. I thought everything was going to be disjointed. I was struggling really, not super hard, but I was confused at first because this first section was so brief and then the second section was so different. And I was like, is there a connection between these two? Do I need to worry about that? Is it all going to be told this way where it's like not tethered to like a real time or space incident? Yeah. And then it picks up a little bit. It like solidifies.
I wrote a story. It's kind of like this for the workshop a while ago. I brought two versions of it to the workshop though, but it was like snippets. It was like little vignettes / snippets. Mine probably tended more to vignettes, but interspersed with disquisitions on surrealism and like what surrealism was and what it could do, which I literally took from emails that my friend and I sent back and forth to each other like 25 years ago and put this together. And like a lot of the little vignettes were also things that I had written and other random ideas from that same time period. And I just kind of put it together as like this surrealist thing, which in my mind had threads in the same way this thing does. I've been thinking about it lately because I wanted to change like four lines in it to try to give a better sense of what I feel like the story is. Like, I feel like it needs to be signposted in certain ways. And I think like a lot of what Smith does in this story is signpost certain things, like having the character talk about how time feels different.
Right.
And the little things about the advice about writing fiction and how you like, you want to do a series of moments, but then this thing kind of breaks it apart. That signpost's kind of telling the reader how to take this in a little bit. And so I feel like I want to put that stuff into that piece I was just talking about, the surrealist piece.
Yeah, I think it can work in a lot of ways. I think sometimes, like, depending on how deliberate those signposts are, that's what makes it meta, right?
Yeah.
Pay attention to what I'm about to say, like, listen up, cue up. Yeah.
That is my takeaway, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, how it is you would, like, alert the reader sort of intentionally so they can piece it together the right way.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's it. Like, I didn't pre-plan the word signpost, but I think that's probably my takeaway, is just the signposting, like telling the reader, like giving us clues along the way of how to take this in.
Yeah.
Even the depth thing, like I'm a writer and then I was writing a story about this. And like even the part where they kind of made the joke about Brokeback Mountain in Vietnam story is like, that kind of sets up the idea of telling stories as a way to understand people.
Yeah. And if I didn't articulate it clearly before, I like the structure like we talked about, but what you said early on about how each of these snippets is referencing the other in some way, like the ash tree is not one snippet. It's not one thread, but it's mentioned in all these different threads. I think that's how you can elevate this structure. And it's not something that I've necessarily like tried to do, because I do think it either requires a little more work up front or a lot of work like kind of after the fact to bring it all together. But that's one way that you can use this and really like, I don't know, make it seem more intentional and well-crafted.
Yeah, well-crafted. Because as a reader, if it feels like a jumble, then it feels like nonsense. But if it feels like there are connections within it, you can sense some kind of structure in it.
Right.
Then it doesn't feel like nonsense anymore.
No. Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Naples Writers Workshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.